November the 22nd, 1993.
Exactly 30 years
after the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in Dealey Plaza. Tonight, Tom Barrington was asked, what is the meaning of the Washington Monument as it appears over the shoulders of Jim Garrison and L. Fletcher Prouty, Mr. X? And the answer was, you mean the obelisk?
Too late.
It's too late. Maybe some other night.
Bill Cooper, and the fact that he's still peddling a videotape that is a fifth or sixth generation of the Zapruder film. You were the man that brought it to our attention, optically enhanced it. You were the photographic expert for the House Select Committee on Assassination in the 70s. As far as I know, Mr. Cooper has not recanted his assessment of his remarks, and you say it's without a doubt.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no question about it. Bill Cooper is very well aware what he's saying is that Bill Greer, the driver, turns around and fires a chrome-plated automatic, or a nickel-plated automatic pistol at the president. And I said, well, if this is true, how can we come back? So we came back and said, it was an electric gun.
Would it have plugged into the cigarette lighter?
And there's another major problem, too. Where Bill Greer was sitting and where the president is sitting, John Connolly's head is directly on fire. Now, that didn't bother Cooper very much, but it seems that it would have bothered Governor Connolly.
Maybe it was an... mind, but beyond that, the Zapruder film, what does it say? We'll certainly continue our discussion in the next hour, but what does the Zapruder film portray?
The Zapruder film is totally unique in the history of the world. It is the only complete record of a political killing. It's become very plastic. We've gotten very, very used to seeing it.
America's town forum with Paul Donahue was proudly presented by
International Trading.
And now that we've got all the bullshit out of the way, folks, we can get down to what really happened on November the 22nd, 1963. On that date, I was the charge of quarters for the field maintenance squadron of the 4245th Bomb Wing of the Strategic Air Command. We had B-52 bombers, Minuteman missiles assigned to our unit, and KC-135 refueling tankers. I had the duty as charge of quarters for that week. That's the person who's in charge of the barracks orderlies to make sure that the lawn is mowed and the barracks are cleaned and the telephone is answered, and if somebody has an emergency, you take care of getting them an emergency leave and pushing them on the bus and off to wherever they've got to go. It was a slow day. It was just a little bit after noon. Wichita Falls, Texas is about a two-hour drive from Dallas. A lot of the people on the base, a lot of the people in the town of Wichita Falls had actually gone to Dallas to witness the motorcade. I was sitting at the desk in the orderly room with my feet on the desk watching the motorcade in Dallas on television. I witnessed the assassination with my own eyes, although I didn't know what I was looking at. I didn't know what was happening. It was very confusing. It was not the Zapruder film that I was seeing. It was a cameraman live on site. I don't even remember where he was standing in relation to the motorcade. But I remember the confusion of that day. I remember knowing something of tremendous import had happened. And then all of a sudden, I realized that the president had just been shot. I picked up the phone and called the command center as waves of emotion began to ripple through my chest and big tears, unexplainable, began to come out of my eyes and roll down my face. I told the officer of the day when he answered the telephone that the president had just been shot in Dallas. There was silence on the line. I could tell that he didn't quite believe what I was saying to him. I then identified identified myself as the charge of quarters for the field maintenance squadron, and he asked me how I knew. I told him that I had just witnessed it on live television from Dallas, and he hung up the phone. Within a very few minutes, the phone rang again, and I was told to roust everybody out of the barracks, that we were going to a red alert status in case the president had been assassinated by a foreign power. We stayed on red alert status for 3 days and three nights, and I literally slept beneath the belly of a B-52, which was loaded with atomic or hydrogen bombs. I never knew exactly which, but I knew that they made the biggest bang in the history of the world, if and when they were ever dropped. It was a fearful time. It was a time when the political will of the American people was shattered. Most of my generation, who lived through the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, have never recovered from the emotional trauma to this very day. And it may have been the reason, ultimately, or part of the reason for the assassination, to destroy the political will of the people, to let them know that their vote didn't count if whoever they voted for could be so easily dispatched. And the deed covered up. Well, I left the Air Force with an honorable discharge, went into the United States Navy, volunteered for submarines, served on submarines, eventually was chosen and trained for the Office of Naval Intelligence. I was, by that time, a second-class petty officer with the rating of quartermaster, which is a specialty of navigating ships, charts, using a sextant, satellite navigation, Omega, all of those wonderful things that I used to play with. But I was specifically trained for the Office of Naval Intelligence in the area of Pacific Area Intelligence Briefings. That is clearly written in my service record. At one point, I was attached to the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet as a member of the briefing team for the Admiral. I was also the Petty Officer of the Watch when I stood watch in the Command Center, which meant that I was the senior enlisted man on duty in the Command Center. I was the designated SPCAT operator, which is special category top secret messages that come over the crypto machine. I was the only one authorized to touch those messages and to deliver them to the officer of the deck for routing. I got to see an awful lot of things that the American public has never known about and most probably never will know anything about. I learned while I was at that duty station that the world that I always thought existed was in reality a great fantasy woven out of sheer cloth, whole cloth, if you will, and that the public is seldom, if ever, told the truth about anything. I also realized during that period of time that I was in the Office of Naval Intelligence by accident, or when filling out my questionnaire for security clearance. I had checked that I was a Freemason because I had been a member of the DeMolay Society as a boy. I had attended three meetings of the DeMolay Society, which is the teenage boy version of Freemasonry. But DeMolay was not on the list, and you had to check every organization that you'd ever belonged to in your whole life. And if they found that you had left one off, that could affect your ability to receive a security clearance. So knowing that DeMolay was not listed, but it was a branch of Freemasonry, I checked Freemasonry and found out later that all of my fellow members of the Office of Naval Intelligence were Freemasons, Knights of Malta, Knights Templar, or the Order of the Rose and Cross. Without exception, ladies and gentlemen, there was no one who was not a member of these four organizations. During that time, I had access to an awful lot of top secret, special categorized information. Now, compartmentalization is a method of making sure that only those who have a clearance to see certain information is authorized to see it. In my position as a member of the intelligence briefing team, I had the need to see an awful lot of information that I would never have had the authorization nor the need to see, except in this instance, we had to put together briefings for the Admiral and his staff and other high-ranking military and civilian members of government who would attend these briefings every morning between 8 and 9 o'clock in the secure briefing room of the command center. Now, ladies and gentlemen, during this period of time, I saw some documents that stated emphatically that the Office of Naval Intelligence had participated in the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and that the headshot had been rendered by the driver of the limousine, a man by the name of William Greer, a Secret Service agent, using an assassination pistol manufactured by the Central Intelligence Agency, which fired an exploding pellet containing a toxic poison. In this instance, it was stated that the poison used a shellfish toxin. And these documents also stated that that was the reason that President Kennedy's brain had been removed from his body and destroyed, so that all traces of the shellfish toxin would be obliterated, would disappear, if you will. Now, this shattered my life, and I left with the intention of never coming back. I did come back after 8 days of being AWOL, after my good friend Bob Swan told me that someday I might have to tell the world what I saw. And so I went back and turned myself in and received a pat on the wrist, because after all, I was one of the Navy's finest. I'd been a patrol boat captain in Vietnam. I was decorated for valor under fire. And I got a slap on the wrist. That was it. Went back to my duties. I saw in those documents also that the act was clearly visible in a film that had been withheld from the public. I had no idea what that meant. I had no idea who took the film. I had no idea where this film was. But I began searching for anything that had been taken on that day in Dealey Plaza, Dallas, Texas, that would show me or confirm that what I had seen in these documents was true or false. I didn't care. I was looking for what happened. For like everyone else, the assassination of John F. Kennedy changed my life. And I, like most of you, have never recovered from the emotional trauma that we all experienced on that day. Now, I left the United States Navy on December the 11th, 1975, only 5 years before I could have retired very comfortably on all of your tax dollars. And I had intended to remain in the service of my country and retire as my father had done. I come from a long line of men who have served this country from the very first one of my ancestors who stepped foot on this soil. But I became disillusioned because of what I'd learned, not just about Kennedy, but many other things. I realized that the intelligence community existed mainly for one purpose, and that the National Security Act passed in 1947 was passed for one purpose, to hide the machinations of the secret societies, to bring about the dissolution of sovereign nation states and create a one world government under the United Nations. I realize that all of this is difficult for many of you to believe out there, especially if this is the first time you've ever listened to the Hour of the Time. And I would suggest that you hear it out, order back tapes, or wait for reruns, and learn what we've already taught many people over the last 2 years. When I left the United States Navy, I began a search, delving down into my own soul, a quest, if you will, as the mysteries would put it, for the United States of America that I had thought that I had known. And what I found over all these years, folks, is absolutely amazing. I've almost given up ever finding any kind of a film that would show William Greer turning around, shooting the president, and had seen many viewings of the Zapruder film on television, always in black and white, always cutting away from the driver at the crucial moment, never showing the driver, in fact, never showing the entire Zapruder film, in fact. And as I said, I'd just about given up ever finding anything that would confirm or deny what I had seen in those documents with the Office of Naval Intelligence. Until I was talking to John Lear in early December of 1988. John Lear is a very famous pilot who holds 17 world speed records, holds every certificate that the FAA grants or has available. And John was asking me about what I had seen in these papers, and I told him that I had seen that the driver of Kennedy's limousine had administered the headshot, and that the act was plainly visible in a film withheld from the public. What happened next shocked me, woke me up to say the least, excited me, made me want to go see John immediately, because in a very calm, almost bored voice, very low, very nonchalant, as if this was something that happened every day, John said, and I quote, "Would you like to see it?" unquote. Well, I asked him when I could see this piece of film, and he invited me to his home just before Christmas 1988, and I went and spent 3 or 4 days with John. I forget exactly how long it was. He showed me this film. We talked about many things, his life flying for Air America in Southeast Asia, the drugs that were flown out of Southeast Asia by the Central Intelligence Agency, the intelligence operations that he had participated in, and I talked about some of the things that I had participated in. And he gave me a copy of this film. I asked him where he got it. He told me that he got it from a friend of his. He couldn't tell me his name, but that he was an agent of the Central Intelligence Agency. The man later turned out to be Lars Hansen. Lars later called me at his home when he found out that I had used this film in a couple of my lectures or presentations to show people that what I had been telling them about William Greer shooting the president could now be seen in this film. And it did, ladies and gentlemen, look exactly like, and still does, William Greer turns with a pistol in his left hand and fires point blank at Kennedy's head. Now, for many years, I have been searching for the truth. And when I have found that I've been wrong, unlike everyone else, I have freely admitted it and gone toward the right path, which is what we all should do. And we're going to get in to where that led me in just a few moments.
You can close the New York Stock Exchange.
Shut down the schools in Indonesia.
In Florence, Italy, a woman will weep from the Duomo clutching a picture of your victim and cursing your name.
Your wife will weep.
His wife will weep.
The world will weep. Grief. Grief beyond imagining.
Despair. The death of innocence and hope.
The bitter burdens which you bear.
The bitter truths you carry in your heart.
You can share them with the world.
You have the power of Pandora's box, Lee. Open it.
I envy you.
We're your family.
I admire you.
I respect you.
Make us proud of you.
We're your family.
We're depending on you.
We're your family.
If you haven't taken steps to protect your financial future in the coming years, I want you to do it right now. I want you to call Swiss America Trading, ask for Gene Miller, 1-800-289-2646. Remember, the only thing in history that has actually protected people from total poverty in times of great economic stress has been the possession of precious metals in one or more of its many forms. Non-confiscatable, non-reportable hard assets are what you need in these troubling times. You can hear Sugar Bear in the background echoing this message, And you'd better listen to Sugar Bear, because he's very seldom wrong, and he has been the one that has protected us against people that have wanted to do us harm in some instances. Now, folks, take a good look around you. Look at what you have built up in your entire life, and then ask yourself, do you want to lose it? How could I fare if tomorrow the stock market took a precipitous tumble, and then they shut it down for a couple of days and opened it back up and it continued to tumble? What would I do? What would happen if the United States government called in the currency immediately and within 24 hours you had to exchange all your cash at a rate of 100 to 1? Now, I'm not telling you this is what's going to happen, but these are some things that could happen. In any event, we know without any doubt that unless they convince the American people to go to a complete cashless system before they are found out, that this whole house of cards must come tumbling down. It must come tumbling down, ladies and gentlemen. There is no way on this earth to avoid it. You must protect yourself. Call 1-800-289-2646. If you really believe that socialism will help you during the troubling times that I am talking about, you'd better think again. Socialism will do one of two things. It will cast you out to die with nothing, or it will enslave you in a system that literally sucks the sustenance from your body. It will rob you of self-respect and dignity. It will return nothing to you. And you will end up in a system like the old Soviet Union, where you pretend to work and the state pretends to pay you. And you never have enough of anything, and you spend most of your time in long, long lines waiting to get a tube of toothpaste. Call now. Ask for Gene Miller. Mention the hour of the time. Thank them for sponsoring this program. Mention my name, William Cooper, and ask Gene Miller to give you a plan that will help you protect what you've earned all your life up to this point. Call now, 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Do it now, folks. Don't procrastinate. You know how you are. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You'll be glad that you did. People. Lars Hansen eventually called me and came to my home and gave me a copy of the Zapruder film and a copy of the film that Lieutenant Colonel Bogreitz had made in Southeast Asia. And on November the 5th of that year at Hollywood High School, I was giving a presentation that was paid for, organized, and put together by volunteers to raise money so that I could continue to try to educate the American people. You see, because of what I was doing, they made it impossible for me to work. Up until that point, I'd been the executive director of several colleges in the state of California. And at every single college where I began to work, someone would come and suggest that I turn in my resignation, or the college would lose its federal funding. I don't know how much you know about education in this country, folks, but if that had happened, no college could survive once they had been used to receiving that kind of money And that's how they suck people into this socialism. So I voluntarily resigned, went my own way, and decided that since they wouldn't let me work, I would spend the rest of my life exposing these people. Exposing them, and that's what I've been doing. Lars Hansen was a member of the volunteer staff of the Hollywood High presentation, and he admits it in his own writings. He gave us the film that we showed there, which he claims he did not know we were going to show. He claims that he stood in line at the microphone to try to ask me why I was showing his film. Yet in the videotapes of that lecture, you can clearly see Lars Hansen holding a video camera as a part of my volunteer staff making a videotape of the entire proceedings. We later found out that Lars Hansen was reared in the Stell Group, where he came to know a fellow Stell member, another member of the Brotherhood, Tom Valentine, intimately. Lars Hansen then began publicly renouncing the film that he had made. Now remember that John Lear had originally told me that he was a Central Intelligence Agency operative. Now, we've never been able to find out if that's true or not, but we do know that he is, was, and always will be a member of the Secret Brotherhood, as is Tom Valentine, L. Fletcher Prouty, and many, many others. The attacks that have been made against me over the years, and the fact that no one anywhere even acknowledges that I have even suggested that William Greer turned around and shot the president, lends more support for my argument than any other argument outstanding. You see, because over the years, I have made this information available to so many people that every congressman and senator, every news broadcasting agency, every talk show host in this country has received my tapes. And have been asked to have me on their show, not by me, but by many Americans who want this discussed. During the last couple of weeks, Newsweek magazine came out with an issue talking about all of the assassination theories. Nowhere in the magazine, even though they discussed some absolutely ludicrous theories, was my assertion ever mentioned, much less discussed. None of the so-called people who claim that I'm full of it have ever talked to me, ever called me, ever asked my viewpoint. None of them. Not a single one. Not L. Fletcher Prouty, not Tom Donahue. Donahue? Not any of these people. At one point, Lars Hansen was publicly denouncing the fact that William Greer turned around and shot the president, was doing everything he could to attempt to discredit me. He and Lifton, you know who Lifton is, don't you? He and Lifton got together with one of these TV news magazines, I forget what it was, First Edition or something like that, and tried to bushwhack me is the only way I can say it. Only Lifton couldn't keep his mouth shut and revealed the whole plan on talk radio in Los Angeles, so I was able to pull out of the deal. And guess what America saw on television? Lars Hansen claiming that William Greer turned around and shot the president in the head, and David Lifton and Bob Groden debunking everything that he said. Now, if Lars Hansen had renounced this theory and was going around the country and doing everything that he could do to discredit me, claiming that I had stolen his film when it was, in fact, him who gave it to me, why was he now stating on television that William Greer turned and shot the president? Well, you see, that was supposed to be me. And when I found out, because Lifton's big mouth, and pulled out of it, because I knew that this would be on tape, you see. If it was live, I would have done it. Because you can't change something that's live. But this was to be taped. And I had already had several experiences with so-called journalists in this country. When they tape something, when it's shown or when it's heard, it is never what was filmed or what was originally seen. The editing process can make you look like a hero or a fool. And I had no intention of being anyone's fool. I called Robert Groden and asked him why he was doing this when he had never talked to me, didn't even know me, had no idea who I was or what I was saying. And he claimed that he had a pristine version of the Zapruder film, which showed that William Greer never took his hands off the wheel. I then challenged him to a public debate where we would show his film and he and I would debate whether or not William Greer turned and shot the president. Remember, I was looking for the proof. I was looking for the truth. And if it turned out that William Greer didn't shoot the president, I wanted to know that too. But guess what? Bob Groden would not debate me and will not debate me to this day and has never heard me out on the subject. And while you heard him tonight on the Tom Valentine Show discuss his pristine film, he has never released it to the public. And the one that he shows in his lectures, ladies and gentlemen, is not the entire Zapruder film. He does not discuss. He does not discuss the areas where the film has been tampered with, nor the sections of film that he does not show. Yet he claims to be the world's number one, foremost photo analyst. And he is, has been, and always will be a liar. You see, Bob Groden never had any training in photography, does not have a degree in photography, never worked in photography, yet he was billed to the United States Congress as the world's foremost number one photo analyst. He had never been in the military and had never been a military or government photo analyst. And he told the Congress that William Greer never took his hands off the steering wheel. In fact, he lied to Congress about the Zapruder film and his own press releases. He claims that he testified extensively before the House Assassination Committee in 1976. I stated this. I revealed to the public how he had lied to Congress and was lying to the public and was not the world's number one foremost photo analyst or anything even resembling such. I know unknown men who were lowly enlisted personnel in the military who knew more about photo analysis than most people who live in this world. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the truth. All of a sudden, Bobo Gritz reared his ugly head and published in his book that I was a charlatan because I had slandered Robert Groden by stating that he had lied to the Congress and that he was not an expert photo analyst. But folks, you can look it up for yourself. It's in his own press releases. It is also in the congressional record. He did testify extensively and submitted a written report on the Zapruder film, which Congress, by the way, never saw. Neither did the Warren Commission view the Zapruder film. Now, it's been stated that I'm selling a sixth-generation poor copy, and that's a lie. I never sold any of the Zapruder film to begin with until Bo Greitz began selling it, which I've already revealed on this program in Greitz's own voice, which reveals that he also is a liar. And then I sold it for what it cost us. We only sold about 120 copies of that film, and we never sold it again. I then made my own documentary of the Kennedy assassination, which was the most extensive and which Oliver Stone copied by running the parade of Dwight David Eisenhower at the beginning of JFK with portions of Eisenhower's speech warning the country against the military-industrial complex. That was originally in my documentary and may be where Oliver Stone got the idea to make the movie JFK and laugh at the world. You see, because it's a Hollywood production, most people believe it, but it's not true at all. What it teaches you is that our Constitution doesn't work. Our form of government is no good. But in fact, it's our government that is turned against us, and that is not true, ladies and gentlemen. Our is the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. It is people who have turned against us. People who belong to the secret societies who have infiltrated and occupied levels of our government, military, and society at large. How do you think all this happened? How do you think there could be a conspiracy of such magnitude and have it come off like it has, with no one talking for all these years, if it were not a religion? And if the perpetrators and participants were not a part of this religion, all sworn to secrecy after having ascended up a ladder of degrees of initiation in an organization of membership in a pyramid of structure that not even they know what they're a part of until they reach the very top. And during this ascension to the Godhead, so to speak, to the position of capstone upon the pyramid, a priest of the worship of the sun, the Lord Lucifer, they have already taken, by that time, over 100 solemn oaths, blood oaths, agreeing to their own sacrificial murder if they ever tell the secrets. Now, I wasn't onto this right away, but when I found out that the Office of Naval Intelligence had participated and that everyone that I met in the Office of Naval Intelligence or connected with it was a member of one of the four secret societies that I've already informed you about, I had no idea of the occult significance of any of this. But over the years, I have studied and probably know more than anybody living upon this earth today outside of the highest levels of these secret societies, the Brotherhood, the Illuminati. I probably know more about them than most of them do. And ladies and gentlemen, the occult connection to the death of John F. Kennedy is overwhelming. Mr. Garrison, when he arrested the man in New Orleans, remember that they had an office. And that office had a door on two different streets. In other words, two doors. And each door was on a different street. The number of one of those doors was 1313. Walt Disney was a 33rd degree Freemason and used to hold meetings of the 33 Club in New Orleans Square of Disneyland on days that it was closed to the public. The number, the address of Disneyland in Anaheim, California was 1313, ladies and gentlemen,
Anaheim Boulevard.
In several of the books written by the Knights Templar and by Freemasons, which I have quoted during the series on the mysteries, they state that Jacques de Molay was burned at the stake in the year 1313. Now, regular history books insist that it was the year 1314. But when you're going with the occult significance of the mysteries, you have to go by their numbers. Therefore, they had a direct connection to an address to an occult significance concerning the Knights Templar. We know that the intelligence community was really created by one Wild Bill Donovan, a Knights Templar. He was also a Knight of Malta. There are many books written which verify that he would only take within the ranks of the OSS Knights Templars, Knights of Malta. William Casey was a Knight of Malta. Now, you have to understand that the Knights of Malta are sworn their first allegiance to the Pope. To the Pope, not to the United States government, not to any other government, but to the Pope. Look at a picture of the outer courtyard of the Vatican. You will see the round, circular Temple of the Sun and the Obelisk of the Phallus of Osiris. They also found stone penises in the rooms of the people that they had arrested in New Orleans. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail here because my time is limited, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm almost out of it. John F. Kennedy was murdered on November the 22nd, 1963, the anniversary date of Pope Clement V's papal bull condemning the Knights Templar to the Inquisition. This is no coincidence. His wounds were to the throat, to the chest area in the back and the head. The exact same wound suffered by Hiram Abeth in the Masonic initiations. Dealey Plaza is an occult outdoor temple of the sun. It is a Masonic temple of the Scottish Rite. It commemorates the location of the first fraternal lodge in Dallas, Texas. And we checked with the Historical Society. It was a Scottish Rite temple. Now, folks, Dealey Plaza is in the shape of a pyramid with the capstone missing. In the position where the eye would normally be is the railroad underpass. There are four quarters of a recreation resembling Stonehenge, which is a temple of the sun. A temple of the sun, ladies and gentlemen. There is standing in Dealey Plaza the symbol of the generative force, the phallus of Osiris, an obelisk, the penis that Isis could not find when she was looking for the pieces of her lover. So she built a stone, or gold, as it was said, phallus, and substituted it on the altar in the place of Osiris. Osiris is the sun, the light, Lucifer. Osiris is the doctrine. Isis is the church. Horus is the whole body of initiates known to us, if you've been listening to this program, as the Brotherhood, the Illuminati, the Tom Valentines, the Bobo Gritzes, the Al Fletcher Proudies, and all the rest of them. And I bet if you followed Bob Groden and Mr. Lichtman around, they would lead you to a lodge of B'nai B'rith, the Scottish Rite, the Rosencross, the Knights of Malta, or the Knights Templar. Don't believe me? Try it, folks. You will be amazed at what you can find out if you just try. Why did I play the tape on the assassination of Abraham Lincoln and his assassin, John Wilkes Booth, at the beginning of this program? Because they are linked. They are linked as a child is linked to his mother in the womb. For Abraham Lincoln wrote the Emancipation Proclamation and freed the blacks, the slaves in this country. And that's why he was assassinated. John F. Kennedy began the rest of the freeing of the slaves in this country. He began to integrate the United States of America. This is all a racial game, ladies and gentlemen. It goes back to the Garden of Eden. There are people in this world who are absolutely insane and believe that they are the superior race. And they are opposed by another group that believes that they are the superior race. One attempting to seat the Pope upon the throne of the world, the other attempting to seat Lucifer upon the throne of the world. Personally, I wish they'd take their Pope and their Lucifer and stick them where the sun don't shine. Because I'm sick of their manipulations and their lies. And they will never have 1,000 years of peace. They will never have a utopia upon this earth. Ever. Ever. Because anything built upon a mountain of lies is only another mountain of lies sitting upon the first mountain of lies. And when you expose the lie at the very bottom of the mountain, the whole thing comes tumbling down. And that's what I have just done. I challenge you again, Robert Groden, to a public debate and a showing of your so-called pristine bullshit film. And if you fail to take me up on this, it will show the American public just exactly what and who you are. Many of us already know, don't we? Don't we, Bob? And you too, Al Fletcher Proudy. Are any of you other scumbags out there who are in the process of destroying this country? You see, I'm not afraid of you. I'm not afraid to die. I'm not afraid of anything. I want my children to have a good future. And I'm willing to sacrifice Anything we have to sacrifice to make sure that that happens. And I'm willing to take all the slings and arrows and all the dames and the rocks and anything else that you can throw at me. And the reason that none of you ever take me up on it is because you know you can't win. Good night, folks, and God bless you all. Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, Texas. He was the sacrificed king in an outdoor temple of the sun. And the assassination was carried out by the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, the Knights Templars, the Knights of Malta, and the ancient order of the Rose and Cross. At the very top, ladies and gentlemen, they are the same organization, the collective body known as the Illuminati.
C-A-J-I, box 1420, Xolo, spelled as box H-O-W-L-O-W, Arizona, 85901. Again, Kaji, box 1420, Xolo, AZ, 85901, USA. Of course, you can call the Research Center. That number is 602-333-5174. Again, 602-333-5174. And of course, listen for the Hour of the Time with Bill Cooper right here on WWCR.